Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday, May 3rd, 5:30 a.m. Central Time. Grain markets are higher again this morning. Believe it or not, Matt Bennett is joining us. Guys, let's start off with yesterday's price action.
Grain and oilseed futures rallied sharply on Thursday. Fund traders were estimated to have covered nearly 20,000 contracts worth of net short positions across the corn, soybean, and wheat markets. Recent rain and a wet U.S. forecast have perhaps resulted in some planting concerns. Talk of crop losses in South America circulated on multiple fronts. The July 24 corn contract posted its best close since early February.
This looks a hell of a lot better all of a sudden, Matthew. Look at this corn market. Multi-month highs. Can you believe it?
You know, yes and no. I mean, in all honesty, like, we threw all the bad news we could possibly throw at this corn market forever, you know. And then, again, I know we talked about this, I believe, yesterday. But, you know, the funds don't really want to carry a gigantic short position into the heart of the growing season. And this spring hasn't been horrible, but let's face it, parts of the Midwest have had a real hard time getting this crop in the ground, you know, and so it's not been ideal. And with it not being ideal, I think the funds are saying, you know what, we need to watch what we're doing here. Let's go ahead and get out of this short position.
Okay, we're going to get to the reasoning for some of this in a second. Even after yesterday's short covering event, and keep in mind, guys, the private groups really don't have a clue what the funds actually did. They try to estimate it. The estimated net shorts at yesterday's close following the big rally, funds were still estimated to be net short 220,000 contracts of corn, 130,000 contracts of soybeans, and about 70,000 contracts of SRW wheat. So there's, even after this little short covering event that we've seen, there's still a massive net short out there. Let's get into some of the reasoning.
Heavy rains in the Brazilian state of Rio Grande do Sul are disrupting the corn and soybean harvests. The soybean harvest as of last Thursday was 76% complete, below the average of 83% for this time of year. The corn crop is 83% harvested. Cloudy conditions accompanying the rainfall are expected to cause quality losses. The torrential rains have caused flooding in rural and urban areas and have also destroyed infrastructure. Additional rain is expected over the next week. Some traders believe that unharvested soybeans will see massive losses.
There's a lot of this has turned into like a global story. There's headlines about this everywhere. You look at some of the pictures that are online of soybean fields that are totally flooded out. You look at the rainfall amounts. This is just in like a 7-day period. 14 inches of rain in some areas of this particular state. Rio Grande do Sul is the southernmost state in Brazil. It accounts for roughly 14% of soybean production in any given year. The estimate that I saw, this is some quick back of the napkin math. The estimate that I saw was that they were expecting 22 million metric tons of soybean production out of this state. And the numbers I saw was that harvest was only 60% complete. Soybean harvest was 60% complete in this state before the flooding, which leaves at risk. It was supposed to be 22 million metric tons out of this state. It leaves 40% of that at risk, which is about 8.8 million metric tons. I don't know if anybody knows how much of that 8.8 million is actually lost or damaged or quality issues. What would be your thought on that, Matt?
I mean, it's always going to seem like it's worse, you know, I think, than what the actual reality
is. It's not a zero, is it?
No, the 8.8 that's left. I can't imagine. I mean, it's going to be like anywhere else. You're going to have low-lying areas. You're going to have areas that aren't as low-lying. And so, you know, you've got to think it could be a very large loss. I mean, shoot, you know, if you let's say there's five of it and some of these guys are right, you know, and still in the mid 140s, I think when you start talking a low 140s potentially due to something like this, I suppose it you know, you and I've talked about it this winter, you know, a low 140s would be a friendly type number. It's not necessarily wildly bullish, but by all means, if people have been thinking of 150 for a long time and then you've scaled that thing back, you know, 5, 6, 7 million tons, I think it's going to have some sort of an effect. And I think.
What if the CONAB number in the mid 140s was closer to reality to begin with? And now you've got to shave, call it, what if it's 4? And that's probably even aggressive, but I don't know. I mean, who knows?
Absolutely.
We'll know when the flood water is rain.
Yeah. You know, 14 inches of rain when you're trying to cut beans. You know, the thing is that. that doesn't work. You know, the thing is with corn, you can wait. I mean, guys pick corn in March in the Midwest sometimes, you know. Yeah. It just happens, you know. Beans, there's nothing there. You know, whenever you have this sort of an issue, you know, and not to mention damage, you know, whether these beans, just getting to them is going to obviously be tough. I saw beans going through the mud or through water yesterday on Twitter, you know, and I know you're always going to see the worst of the worst, but there's no doubt there's going to be some pretty massive losses.
Okay, there's similar-ish stories coming out of Argentina, crop losses, but for different reasons.
So the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange has cut its forecast for the Argentine corn crop. The exchange reduced its outlook for the crop by 6.1% to 46.5 million metric tons. The reduction is due to leafhoppers damaging the crop. The insects have caused an estimated $1.3 billion in damage. The hot and dry weather that the country experienced back in March has also impacted the crop. The unfavorable weather could also affect Argentina's soybean crop. Below freezing temperatures are forecast for Argentina in the coming days, which will help with the leafhopper outbreak.
We're going to be back to discussing USDA versus its South American counterparts here in short order, because USDA's got the Argentina corn number at 55, and now the grain exchange is at, 46.5? That's a difference of 8.5 million metric tons, or 335 million bushels. When you pair that with the USDA versus CONAB disparity in corn, so Brazil and Argentina, USDA versus South America, you're talking like 800 or 900 million bushels of corn. That's the discrepancy between USDA and its South American counterparts. I don't know. I don't know who's right. USDA and the World Board think that they're right, but I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know either. But last year, you know, with this Argentine crop, it took them forever to come down on the bean crop, which was half a crop ultimately. Finally, the USDA had to kind of eat crow and come in and lower their estimate because the crop wasn't there. It's tough. I mean, they soul play it almost every time. It's worked for them many times in the past. I mean, watching in my career, I've seen that happen. But this year, it sure seems to me that they're way low, or USDA is way high in Brazil and Argentina. I'm not down there, so I don't know. It's pretty odd that in both countries, they're that much higher than what people in those countries say that the crop is. So time will tell, but that's a lot of corn.
So you're a fund trader, you're managing a couple billion dollars in a grain book. Does what you just said, I mean, is that a concern for you?
Here's the thing, Joe. I mean, if you're managing that book, you know, and you've seen over the last few weeks a lot of this commodity buying that's surfaced, you know, and corn and beans are kind of sitting off there to the side. No one asked them to dance, you know, and I think finally they're looking over corn and beans saying, hey, maybe this is a value, especially with some of the issues that we're seeing. I mean, fundamentally, are we going to be extremely tight on corn and beans? No. But are we going to be tighter than what we were? I mean, sure appears that's going to be the case. So, yeah, if I'm a fund manager, I'm at least getting myself into a more agile area, you know, where I can move, where I can. I don't necessarily have to just absolutely unleash every single short position to try to get long. I mean, we've seen that before, and obviously it creates one heck of a rally. I think that they've been trying to reduce their short over the last 2 to 3 weeks in waves. But, you know, it's nothing like it would be if you got into a situation where, hey, maybe we're going to turn off hot and dry, you know, like some of these people have felt for with El Nino coming to an end. You know, people talked about that all winter. So I think the funds are just wanting to get into a more flexible situation.
I would be a little bit nervous personally, given everything we just talked about paired with the U.S. weather situation, which is wet. But you know what? There's a reason that I'm on YouTube at 5 a.m. and not managing like billions of dollars. So they're smarter than me. That's the moral of the story.
USDA released weekly drought monitor data yesterday. The majority of the Corn Belt received rainfall last week. As a result, drought conditions improved across a large portion of Missouri, southwest Minnesota, central Wisconsin, and western Illinois. The northwest and southeast portions of Iowa also saw conditions improve. The majority of the high plains received rain last week. Eastern Kansas, eastern Nebraska, and eastern South Dakota saw drought conditions improve. Meanwhile, a lack of precipitation across south central Kansas and northern Oklahoma caused conditions to deteriorate. So when we look at the percentage of U.S. areas experiencing drought, corn country 19%, soybeans 17%, winter wheat 28%, spring wheat 27%, and cattle country 17%.
Gosh, it would appear as if the drought in Iowa is on its way out. I mean, you look at the recent rainfall totals. This is just the last 3 days, and then this is the last 7 days. I mean, an inch, 2 inches, 3 inches of rain. I mean, is it a total drought buster? No, but it's going to go a long way.
Yeah, for sure. And once you start getting rain, you know, it usually gives you opportunity to get more rain. You know, you charge the atmosphere, get some rain in the topsoil. It just gets everything going. And so, I don't know. You've got to think that this is going to cause some improvements. At the same time, I still look at some of the long-term stuff, you know, and I was telling you this yesterday. I know Snodgrass put a really good piece together for us that was very compelling, you know, as far as what the rain, the lack of rain, you know, in the southwestern part, you know, I'm going to call it Panhandle of Texas and Oklahoma and southwestern Kansas. I mean, they just cannot buy rain in that part of the world. And many times, whenever you're super dry in that part of the world, it moves to the north and northeast. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Iowa's been better shaped than what they've been in a while. But at the same time, they're not going to go in with an abundance of subsoil moisture. So obviously you're still going to need timely rainfall. Last year we saw timely rainfall. It showed up and we had a good crop, you know, and there's nothing that says that won't happen again, but you need subsoil moisture if you get into a dry summer.
Talk to me about planting delays. There was rain. We've got more rain coming. This is just the next 5 days. What's expected? Another inch to 2 inches for Iowa, southern Minnesota, parts of Illinois, Nebraska, Wisconsin, you name it. There's more rain coming.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of folks that I talk to, you know, that just they're sitting and they're saying, oh, it's going to be a week before we can think about it. That was kind of us. Now, last night, that system that moved through actually moved to the north of us. There was some of it actually went to the south as well. We got fortunate. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything in my gauge this morning. And so supposed to have a chance at rain again this weekend, but if we don't get any more rain, then there'll be a lot of people in my part of the world. I think it's a fairly small area that didn't get anything. But I think there'll be a lot of folks running maybe next Monday or probably even Sunday. But we're getting closer here. But you get north of us, you get into eastern Iowa, up into Minnesota. A lot of those folks are going to be sitting for a while.
All right, let's get to export sales.
U.S. corn and soybean export sales were modest last week. Net corn sales were reported at 30 million bushels, down 42% from the previous week and down 1% from the prior four-week average. Japan was the largest corn buyer for the week. Net soybean sales came in at 15 million bushels. The print was up 96% from the previous week and up 45% from the prior four-week average. Egypt was the largest buyer for the week. Net wheat sales reductions of 1 million bushels were down noticeably from the previous week and from the prior four-week average. Unknown destinations made up a substantial amount of wheat sales reductions last week.
So the flooding that we talked about in southern Brazil is really a massive problem. You would think eventually it would be reflected in export pricing. And for the moment, Brazil is still much cheaper than what we can offer, especially shipped to China and Asian destinations. So maybe that's the thing that you need to watch as your indicator.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think it could play in. I would have sure liked to have seen corn sales a little better yesterday than what they were. I mean, three out of the last 4 weeks have been duds, but overall, we're still running ahead of pace. You know, obviously, you got to ship it, but at the same time, you know, our river system's in a lot better shape than what it's been. We're actually talking about in some areas being a flood stage, you know, but I think that's going to quickly subside. But regardless, I do think that that's the one bright spot in exports, in my opinion, is that corn sales overall are in pretty darn good shape. Bean sales, I think you're going to have to lean on something like that from Brazil if you're even going to want, I think, to reach the USDA goal.
I have one thing that I want to bring up. I should have mentioned this at the top of the show here, but we've been told that, you know, these rallies in the grains are going to be met with farmer selling. So much corn out there. There's so much grain that needs to be priced. When is farmer selling or is farmer selling going to cap this rally attempt?
That's a pretty good question. And here's the thing, Joe, I really felt like that this winter. You know, you got the farmer holding on to 9 billion bushels of corn as of what the January stocks report, you know.
Yeah.
That's a lot of corn, you know, and the funds are sitting there at the time with probably pushing $1.5 billion short. Okay. But the thing is that there's been, in my opinion, a steady flow of sales. It's not been anything all at once. I think the farmer's probably still sitting on, maybe 5 billion bushels of corn, which is a lot of corn.
Yeah.
I think if you get if this rally continues, you know, and you turn this into, oh, I don't know, get July corn up to, you know, maybe 485, 490. In my opinion, there'll be people, you know, in the Western Corn Belt that are actually running overs where they're seeing some $5 bids. I do think that at that point you could see some basis widening in those areas. Okay. Now in my area, we don't have a great basis. I mean, that's what's interesting. You know, you talk to someone in Iowa that's got 3 ethanol plants within 30 miles of their house, you know, they've got a pretty darn good basis still. And I still think it's a result, you know, of the just absolute, lack of corn due to the drought in 22. You know, I mean, it's still been something that it's not really gone away yet, that everyone's gotten the pump primed, if you will, especially in the high usage areas. So yeah, I do think that it could have an impact if you continue higher, but it sure hasn't had the impact I thought it would yet. It's been because it's been such a quiet market. You know, it's been kind of a slow, steady burn, you know, and people have sold corn, I think, to raise funds. Whereas at this point, you know, you might see a little bigger wall of selling.
Cattle futures were sharply higher yesterday, and we had some, I guess, were they bullish bird flu headlines? I don't know.
Yeah, we had news yesterday that 30 samples of ground beef that were tested by USDA for bird flu particles came back negative. Obviously, USDA is going to continue to test, but that news sent the cattle futures headed for straight up. It was great. Feeders were up 217 to 362. Live cattle were up $1.90 to 295. Box beef had another down day. Choice end of the day at 292.90. That was down 64 cents. Select end of the day at 287.98. That was down 9 cents.
So is it game on for the cattle bulls again, Matt, or was that a one-day headline rally?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a one-day headline rally. I think that if they find that, you know, they're actually testing meat, I believe, for dairy as well, you know, whether there could be any of this that affects the meat as far as dairy that gets butchered. I think if you get the all go there, it's probably more up. I don't know. Here's the thing. I think right now you're still going to be in maybe not buying all in. I don't think that you see these absolute highs like 190s to 200 potential until towards the end of the year when you get excessively low cattle on feed numbers. Yes, this month was low. But I think if you verify that again this next month, maybe you get a little bit of something going, but I don't know. Right now, I just can't get super bullish. I'm more of a neutral type feel.
Mackenzie, cash cattle are still strong. Cash feeder cattle are really strong. Is that the deal?
Yep, that's correct. I think down in the south, to start off with, cash fat cattle was steady this week. However, there were some cattle here in Nebraska yesterday that sold that were $2 higher than last week when it comes to fat cattle. And yeah, feeder cattle, definitely strong.
Outside markets on Friday morning, guys, U.S. dollars about flat. Stocks are up a little bit. Bonds are flat. Crude oil is up 22 cents in the June WTI at 79.18. Everybody have a nice weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.